The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
And it's from Mark chapter 10, starting at verse 46. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Thanks, Sam.
I love weddings. I love the food. I love the speeches. But I don't know that I like the dancing because I don't know what to do with my hands. Like when I move my hands, it looks like dad dancing because that's what it is. I'm a dad dancing. But if I fold my arms, that just looks weird. And if I put my hands in my pockets, that's just wrong. But you can't blame me because for my whole life, I've been told to be calm and sensible. Now, suddenly on the dance floor, I'm supposed to lose it. And that's a whole problem with Jesus as well. For our whole life, we've been told to be calm and sensible. And then Jesus comes along and he says he's the Son of God, that he's born of a virgin, that he dies on a cross for us, rises from the dead 3 days later. Oh, and when he was alive, he used to give blind people their sight again. What do I do with that? What would Jesus say to someone like me who's calm and sensible? So welcome again to our February series of talks where we've asked this question, what would Jesus say? And each week we look at Jesus meeting a different person in the Bible. We ask the question, what would Jesus say to this person? And what would Jesus say to me today? And this comes in the form of a 20-minute talk from me now, followed by some question and answer from you guys. So today is week 4. We come to the final one in our series, and our question is this. What would Jesus say to the calm and sensible? Because in that Bible story that we just heard, Jesus meets someone who's told to be calm and sensible. Then they, Jesus and his followers, came to Jericho. And Jesus and his followers, together with a large crowd, they were leaving the city. And the blind man was there. And this blind man was called Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus, which means the son of Timaeus. This blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Now many rebuked him and they told him, "Shh, to be quiet." But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." There's a beggar who's blind, and when he hears that it's Jesus walking by, he calls out to Jesus. But people tell him to be quiet, to be calm and sensible. But that just makes him cry out all the more. Now that's the part of the story I don't get, because I don't like it when people are loud. I don't like it when people talk on a train. I don't like it when people talk in a library. And I don't like it when people talk in a movie. So why can't this guy just be calm and sensible? Well, to find out, we need to hear the three things that Jesus tells this man and the three things that he tells us today. So number one, from the story, we learn this. You know, we do need to be calm and sensible. In the story, we read that many rebuked the blind man and they told him to be quiet, just be calm and sensible. And I too would have said the same thing to this blind man. When I was young, I used to run the City to Surf, that fun run in Sydney, the 14-kilometre run once a year. And when I was young, at first it was a lot of fun because every year my times just got faster. But then as I got older, it stopped being fun because every year my times just got slower. At first, I used to get passed by the women and children, and that was all right. But then I started getting passed by people in fancy dress. So far, I've been passed by Caveman, Batman, and the Fairy Godmother. Now, I knew it wasn't really a Fairy Godmother, that it was someone dressed up as a Fairy Godmother, and that's because I'm a scientist. I believe in facts, evidence, and data. I don't believe in Fairy Godmothers, leprechauns, or unicorns. I need facts, evidence, and data. Otherwise, you just believe in anything. And so, as a doctor, if you come to me and you say you're having a heart attack, I won't believe you. You need to prove it. I won't take your word for it. I need to prove it. I need to see a blood test. I need to see a chest x-ray. I need to see an ECG. I need facts, evidence, and data. I'm a person of the sciences. Science is amazing. Science has given us the motor car. It's given us the microwave. It's given us the mobile phone. We need to be calm and sensible. Facts, evidence, and data. Otherwise, we would just believe in anything. But the second thing that we learn from the story is this. We can also believe in miracles. The story goes on. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked the man. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately, the blind man received his sight and he followed Jesus along the road. The blind man sees again. Jesus performs a miracle. Now, what do I do with this as a scientist? Science tells me that gravity will pull this bowling ball to the ground at 9.8 meters per second squared. Science tells me that all things being equal at sea level, water will boil at 100 degrees Celsius. And science tells me that a blind man will not see again. So what do I do with this as a scientist? Well, here I find John Lennox very helpful. Maybe we know John Lennox. He has a PhD in mathematics. He's a professor of mathematics at Oxford University in the UK. And in his book, Can Science Explain Everything?, he quotes a story from C.S. Lewis. And John Lennox says, imagine that we go to a hotel and that night we put $100 in the bedside drawer. And imagine if the next night we put in another $100 bill in our bedside drawer. And imagine if the next night we put in another $100 bill in our bedside drawer. And then later, the next night, we open the drawer and we find nothing. What do we think? Do we conclude, oh my gosh, the laws of mathematics have been broken? No, we conclude that someone has broken and entered into our room and taken our money. It's because I do believe in the laws of maths that I believe someone has broken and entered into my room. If I didn't believe in the laws of mathematics, I think, whoa, this stuff happens all the time. 100 plus 100 plus 100 equals zero. But no, it's because I believe in the laws of mathematics. I believe that someone has come in, they've broken and entered into my room, the room is open. Science tells me that all things being equal, water will boil at 100 degrees Celsius. So what do I do when I boil the water and it doesn't boil at 100 degrees Celsius? Do I conclude that the laws of science have been broken? No, I conclude that someone has broken and entered into my experiment. They've added some sugar to my water. The system is open. All things are not equal. Now, a blind man sees again. What do I do with this as a scientist? Do I conclude that the laws of science have been broken? No, I conclude that someone has broken and entered into the system. The universe is open to a God who breaks and enters. All things are not equal. You know, studies consistently show that 40% of scientists believe in a supernatural God. 40% of scientists believe in a God who performs miracles. How can scientists believe in miracles? Well, it's because scientists believe in an ordered universe. But as a Christian, I believe that the universe is ordered because there's an ordered God behind this universe. That's why the universe is ordered. And because there is an ordered God behind the universe, this God is free to break and enter into the universe and do whatever he wants. The universe is open. All things are not equal. But how do I know that there's a God who's behind all this in the universe? Well, this brings us to the third thing that we learn from the story, and it's this. We also believe in love. In the story, we hear this. When the blind man heard that it was Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." The man asked for mercy, love, and justice from Jesus. Now, as a scientist, what do I do with this? If someone asks me for mercy and love, what do I do as a scientist? Do I say, hey, do you want a kilogram of mercy? Can I give you a liter of love? No, because science is the wrong method here. There's so much that we believe that science can't give us. Now, as a scientist, when I get home and my wife says to me, I love you, what do I do as a scientist? Do I say, prove it. I won't take you at your word. I need facts, evidence, and data. Give me a blood test. Give me a chest x-ray. Show me an ECG. I need facts, evidence, and data. No, we don't do that because there's so many things that we believe and know to be true that science can't give us. There's more to this world than what science can give us. Now, let's have a look at these statements here. It is wrong for a husband to bully his wife. Now, we all believe and know this to be true. It's wrong for a husband to bully his wife. Let's look at the next one. A human being has intrinsic value regardless of their age, race, or ability to work. We all believe this. We know it to be true. Let's look at the next one. It is good to be generous to those less fortunate than us. We all know this to be true and we believe it. We believe all three of these statements. We believe that they're absolute truths, true for all peoples, all times, all places. We feel that they're even self-evidently true, so obviously true. But science can't prove any one of those statements for us. There's more to this world than what science can give us. We believe more than what science can give us. And this is because science can only give us a thin explanation for things, when often there's a thick explanation for things. I'm getting this example from John Lennox. The water is boiling at 100 degrees Celsius. Why? Please explain. Well, as a scientist, I know the physical cause. It's heat being applied to water molecules. That's why the water's boiling. But there are also other explanations. It's also because my auntie Irene is boiling the water. It's also because she's trying to make me a cup of tea. Why? Because in the end, she loves me. Science can only explain the physical cause, it's heat being applied to water molecules, but it can't give me the bigger explanation. To know that, I have to know my auntie Irene, to know that she's making me a cup of tea because she loves me. Now, in this story that we just heard, a blind man sees again. Why? Please explain. Well, as a scientist, I can give you the physical cause. It's because the optic nerve has been restored. But in the story, there's a thicker explanation. It's because Jesus has performed a miracle. Why? Because he wants this man to see again. Why? Because Jesus loves the man. Science can give me the first explanation, but to know that it's Jesus doing a miracle so the man can see again because Jesus loves him, to know that, I need to know Jesus. In the story, the blind man sees something that no one else can see, and it's this. The universe is open. And there's a God who's behind the universe. And he loves us, he made us, and he saves us. And the most loving thing he did was to send us his son Jesus, the Son of God, to die for us and now to live for us. And we can live for him as he lives for us. The Bible's biggest claim isn't that there's a God. That's easy to believe. It's not that there's a God who does miracles. That's easy to believe. The Bible's biggest claim is this, there's a God who loves us. And a blind man believed this. And Jesus asked us to believe the same. So our original question was this. What would Jesus say to the calm and sensible? And today we've heard three things. Number one, we do need to be calm and sensible, otherwise we'll believe in anything. But at the same time, we can be open to the idea of miracles. There's an open universe and there's a God who breaks and enters. How do we believe this? Because number three, we also believe that there's a God who loves us. Now, this is a bit of music, black dots on a white background. And for the Asians in this room, it's been a traumatic flashback to many theory exams. And as a little Asian boy, I used to kill the theory exams. I used to get 100% in my musical theory, but I used to get zero in the oral component because I used to treat music like a science, but I actually couldn't hear the music. All I saw was black dots on a white paper. And there's so much more to music than just black dots on a white bit of paper, because there's music to hear, and there's a performer to enjoy, and there's a composer to get to know. If all we see in this universe is atoms and molecules, we've missed the point. Because there's also awe, there's wonder, there's beauty, there's a performance to enjoy, and in there there's a composer that we can know personally. There's a God who loves us, who made us, and who saved us. And a blind man believed this, and Jesus asked us to do the same. So the question is, Jesus asked the man, what do you want me to do for you? Why would Jesus ask when it's so obvious what the man wants him to do, and Jesus would know anyway? It's interesting that often Jesus does that. He gives us a part to play. So there was that moment where the woman touched Jesus by the hem of his garment, and immediately she was healed. And Jesus stopped and said, who touched me? When Jesus knew who touched him, and it forced the woman to come out in public and explain what she'd just done. And many commentators say, well, what it was is it gave a chance for public restoration. So this woman had maybe a life of shame, but in that moment, Jesus was able to publicly restore her. So often there's a reason, and maybe here was a chance for the man to publicly display his faith, maybe. It's one of those interesting things of what part do we have in God's universe? Why does he want us to pray? But somehow God wants us to have this mutual responsibility where we too have a part to play. And I think that's what he's asking the man to do.
A question that has... Sure. We've got a few questions around a similar issue. So I think it kind of comes back to what is faith? How does it relate to reason?
Yeah, so unfortunately in English we have all these different words, faith, trust, believe, and we have this wrong idea that faith is believing something I can't see or know to be true, when other languages don't operate like that. So the Bible, there's only one word for faith, and it's operating on all those levels. Faith really is to believe, to know, to trust, to be loyal. So to believe in Jesus is to trust him at his word. Just like when my wife says, I love you, that's the evidence I need. I just need her word. I don't pull out an ECG, a chest x-ray, and a blood ampule. So I believe Jesus at his word. I trust him, and I know he is who he says he is. And I think that's what faith is. And there's enough corroborating evidence for us to know. So faith isn't knowing something that we can't prove. It's understanding that I have all the corroborating evidence I need to know this to be true. So when I go through customs and the immigration officer says, how do I know you're an Australian? I pull out a passport, and that's a corroborating evidence. At that moment, they don't say, hey, I need something else to prove the passport is true, like a birth certificate. No, the passport is it. It stops with the passport, because if there's something else I needed, well, that would become the passport. So at some stage, we realize we have enough corroborating evidence. So what corroborating evidence do we need? Well, the claim that Jesus is the Son of God who loves us and who died for us, what sort of claim is that? So in life, there are mathematical claims, 1 plus 1 equals 2. There are scientific claims, water boils 100 degrees Celsius. There are historical claims, World War I ended in 1945. There are legal claims, I am innocent of this crime. There are relational claims, I love you. And there are experiential claims, I cook a good pancake. All right, so how do you prove the I love you claim. A relational claim, you actually have to know the person. How do you prove the experiential claim, I cook a good pancake? You can't use the other proofs, math, science, history, legal. You actually have to eat the pancake. And so when Jesus says, I'm the Son of God who knows you, loves you, and died for you, it's not a mathematical claim, so we can't use 1 plus 1 equals 2 on that. It's sort of a historical claim. We look at the documents about Jesus. It's sort of a legal claim in that we need eyewitnesses. It's not really a scientific claim because we can't set up a repeatable, observable experiment. It's much more of a relational claim. I have to know Jesus, take him at his word, and it's an experiential claim. I have to experience Jesus. And that's why the Bible has that verse that says, taste the Lord and see. In the same way, taste a pancake, taste Jesus and see for yourself. And I think that's how we know, and that's how we can be calm and sensible.
Okay, so faith, trust, it's not blind faith in spite of reasons or because of a lack of reason.
Yeah, in fact, it's a justified, warranted, corroborated faith.
So it's because of the reasons.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up questions or comments from the floor?
Yeah, so the question is, with so much suffering, horrible suffering, ongoing suffering going on, how do we match it with the Jesus who says he loves us? And that's where we sort of have to think of it this way. If there is no God, there's actually no such thing as suffering because it's just an illusion. We're just atoms and molecules. These are just events that go on. If there isn't a loving God, then there's no definition of love. And again, we think, okay, that's just what goes on. If there isn't a fair God, then we wouldn't say, okay, that's unfair. But the fact that we feel like this is wrong, it's unfair, and it's suffering, we know there must be a yardstick, a loving, fair God that we can cry out to. And the fact that we cry out to this God implies he must be loving, he must be fair, and he is the God who's powerful enough to make the universe. He's powerful enough to remove suffering. So in the end, we can come up with a lot of guesses and reasons, and there are many good guesses we can come up with. One guess would be, we can't avoid suffering. We shouldn't look for it, but suffering finds a way to find us, and somehow we become better people for who we are because of suffering. Also, there must be, if God is loving and fair, there must be a loving, fair reason for what's going on, even though we don't know what it is. And I compare it to that moment where a parent takes a child for vaccination, and the kid gets the vaccination, and they look at you horrified, like, you're a loving, fair parent. How can you let this happen to me? But then they think, okay, if you're a loving, fair parent, there must be a loving, fair reason why this is going on. But finally, the ultimate answer is, whatever that reason is, we don't know, but it must be a really loving reason that Jesus himself suffered unjustly with us and for us, and there's a chapter still to come. So the story I like to give is when I saw The Empire Strikes Back as a little kid, I walked out because the ending was horrible. You know, Luke lost his arm, found it. Darth was his father. Sorry if I ruined that for you. And Han Solo was left frozen. And I didn't know what had happened, but I didn't know there was another chapter to come where all things were restored. And the Bible tells us there's still another chapter to come. There will be a happy ending. And someone said, so if right now it's not happy, that's because the ending hasn't come yet.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.